This episode is brought to you by Noom. Forget one-size-fits-all diets. With Noom, you get a personalized weight loss plan that's tailored to your lifestyle. No food is off-limits. Enjoy your favorites while discovering healthier habits. Noom's users love the flexible approach, blending psychology and biology to help you lose weight in a way that's sustainable for you. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's N-O-O-M.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
It's 3 o'clock somewhere. Time for a My Mochi ice cream snack. My Mochi ice cream is cool, creamy scoops of premium ice cream wrapped in sweet, pillowy dough. And get this. All of My Mochi's fabulous flavors, like strawberry, mango, double chocolate, and cookies and cream, are only around 80 calories per piece. Talk about a guilt-free, indulgent experience. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned, gluten-free mochis that are great for grab-and-go. So feel good while curbing your afternoon cravings, or the midnight munchies. Yeah. You know who you are, with the joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream. Find My Mochi ice cream at Target or visit MyMochi.com to locate a grocery store near you.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 597, Kyle.
Yeah.
There's a lot of phonetic hard C sounds in this room right now, or K's if you want. Chris, Kyle, Katie.
I'm really glad you don't spell it with a K, though.
No.
Not a Kris Kringle type.
Or weirder if it was K-H-R-I-S.
That'd just be just pretentious.
Really, yeah, that would be really shitty. I shouldn't do it that way.
No. Your parents are good people and didn't name you that way.
Or K-R-I-S-S. Wait a minute. I have to say, you weren't there. You didn't come to the Reno show last night, did you?
Oh, I missed it. I was real upset.
It was... We did an episode of At Midnight last night with Reno, with the Reno cast. And I don't just mean, like, Tom and Ben and Carrie and Carlos and Cedric, like, they were, it was Reno.
Wait, they were them?
They were them, and they played as them the whole show, and it was fucking amazing. It was basically like an episode of Reno.
I just learned that you can feel double disappointment, that you can miss something, and then find out it was way cooler than the thing you thought you missed.
Well, here's the thing. We, you know, one of the challenges of the show is that we have to cut it down to 21 minutes for air, but every so often, we get to post unedited versions, and so we're posting... The show was an hour long, and I think we're posting the hour of completely unedited.
That rules.
It was so much fucking fun. It was so much fucking fun. So that'll be on the Comedy Central app or cc.com, the Reno 911 episode of At Midnight, unedited, uncensored.
Oh, my God.
It was they're so goddamn funny. This episode
what
was...
What a day. Who's on this episode?
This episode was Gilbert Gottfried.
Oh, he is a legend and delightful.
Amazing. He was on At Midnight in New York last week. He was great on the podcast and someone that I have... whose comedy I have followed for many, many... You know, Will Wheaton and I, when we were teenagers, were obsessed with Gilbert. And we used to do bad Gilbert Gottfried impersonations. And when Gilbert was on At Midnight last week, I took video of Gilbert going, "Hello, Will Wheaton!" And I go, "Is there anything else you want to say?" And he goes, "Nah." It was amazing. So I sent that to Will. And Will sent me this text. And he was like, "Can you believe that this is our lives now? That we get to go back and do all this stuff?"
The kid that got to drive the Enterprise is saying that to you?
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
"Can you believe this is our lives now?"
Yeah.
The guy fucking got to drive the Enterprise.
Yeah, I know, but everyone gave him shit for it.
I didn't. I was too young.
Gilbert's promoting his podcast, Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast, on the Sideshow Network. This has been a quasi-hostful intro to the Gilbert Gottfried Podcast number 597.
Everyone, check out Phoeb.
So, edit that last part out.
What? Why? We're not going to make a dent. We only have 40 episodes. That's what it's like when I schedule my own time to get to podcasts.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Do you want want me to spoon you during the whole interview?
Please.
Would that make it, would that make it, would that warm it up? We could just.
Why do you even have to ask?
I shouldn't have asked. I apologize later, right? Don't ask for permission. Ask for forgiveness. it's nice to see you. We met for the first time, I think.
Are we on?
This started already, yeah.
Yes.
We met for the first time, I think, at SF Sketchfest this past year. I don't know if we'd actually met before, but I mean, I've always been a huge fan of yours because I watched every stand-up everything in the 80s, so I've been watching you for all the MTV Image campaign spots you used to do.
Oh, my God. You remember that?
Yeah.
Jeez. Yes, that was early, early MTV.
Right.
Yeah. I remember they saw me at a club. This is after I failed on a bunch of things. And I failed on a season of Saturday Night Live. And I was even fired from Thick of the Night. Yeah, see, that's when you've hit rock bottom. When Alan Thick goes, Gilbert, you fade. Gilbert, you beneath me taste in Jew business. And so they saw me at a club and they asked me to audition. And I went in and I just improvised some stuff at MTV. And they started using it.
A lot. Like they used it a lot. Like
throughout the whole day. That was my first good exposure.
What was it before that? When did you start doing stand-up and where did you start doing stand-up?
Oh, God. I was like 15. Oh. I was 15. I wasn't like 15.
You were literally 15.
It's not like I was in my 50s and I just 15. But no. I was like 15.
Yeah.
It was like
a 15. Yeah.
Yes. I was 15. First time I got up on stage at like the bitter end.
Oh, wow. And what was the stand-up scene like when you started?
There wasn't much. The stand-up boom hadn't started yet. And so I went up. I just wrote my name down on the list. It was one of those open mic nights. And next thing you know, here I am doing this show.
Well, that was a lot. I feel like there was a lot of stuff in there.
Had I known doing this show one day, I never would have gone in the business. But who thought ahead?
Well, it's because before the stand-up boom, how did it even occur to you that that was a thing that you could do?
God knows. I mean, it was one of those ridiculous things. Like I was one of these kids who would watch TV and old movies on TV and start imitating who I saw on TV. Mm-hmm. And then somebody recommended. They said, oh, there's this club in the village. Why don't you go on and try that? And I don't know if I did well or were too stupid to know that I bombed.
Why does I'm it's hard for me to picture a time without the comedy boom. So the idea when that everything had not been observed by comedy yet.
Yes.
It was like fertile. It was like you could just scoop the fish, jump into the boat themselves.
Yeah. it's kind of like there was, especially at certain times, the comedy boom goes up and down. But there was a time I remember it seemed like every block had about four comedy clubs on
it. Sure, yeah. And then before that, if you did say, ladies go to the bathroom in groups, we'll be like, I never noticed that before. I hope people keep talking about that premise for 30, 40 years.
Yeah, or if a glass broke while you're on stage and you said it's Memorex, that was like, what an ad lib. Oh, my God. Wait a second. And men and women are different?
That's before at that point. I think, you know, before 1978, the consensus was they're exactly the same.
Yeah. Wow. It's they're different than... And wait a second. women sit down when they pee? I didn't know this.
And by the way, just in case you were curious, New York and Los Angeles, very different cities.
Yeah.
Like, wildly different cities.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that L.A. is mellow and New York isn't?
Yeah.
New York's more angry?
Yeah.
I didn't know this.
I'm so glad someone came along to point these things out.
And can you believe it? This guy I saw last night said that cab drivers and guys who work in 7-Eleven have a hard time speaking English.
That's crazy that someone I thought it was just me.
Yeah.
For the longest time, I thought I was the only one. And I can't even talk to you about flying anywhere because air travel, someone needs to take that down a notch, too, comedically.
Yeah, it's about time someone had the guts
to stand up to big airlines.
Air travel. And, you know, I'm just waiting for somebody who has the balls to talk about those giant boxes of candy you get in movie theaters.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, who are they trying to impress with that business? I mean, and, you know, you have to take a mortgage out on your house to buy the candy. No one had ever put that into words before. It's like they're narrating my life. That's why.
And are you saying that if a man and woman are at home, the man clutches the remote control?
Won't let go of it, apparently.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I thought I was the only one who knew that.
Well, he clutches it because apparently men really like sports.
Yeah.
And so he's very protective, which the women should understand because they like shoes and not sports.
And are men a little bit on the Neanderthal side?
Yes, and women are a little bit complex and hard. And what is this clitoris that they keep talking about? Yep. I think we just covered 1978 to about 1999. For anyone who wants to know.
I remember one time I was on a show, a talk show, and one of the other guests was Jimmy J.J. Walker.
Of course, yes.
And I started, someone asked me about what kind of material you do, and as a joke, I started saying stuff like that. I said, well, I do jokes about 7-Eleven and about men and women and about 10. I started doing all the roll off of that. And then backstage, Jimmy Walker came over to me and goes, you just did my whole act.
But not ironically. He was dead serious.
I heard they hated Jimmy Walker on that show.
Oh, really?
Yes. Like, I know John Amos. Was that his name?
Yeah, the
father.
Dad.
Mm-hmm. He hated him. And I think the mother hated him, too, because I think the two of them really thought that they were doing like Raisin in the Sun.
Right.
Or something. And he was making it goofy.
And probably making more money because he popped on the show.
He was making it a hit show.
He was basically the Fonzie of Good Times.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. He was. I never heard it described that way. But he was the Fonzie of Good. He uses that to get laid. He goes up to women and goes, ha, I'm the Fonzie of Good Times.
And I'm sure anyone over the age of 52 will fuck the shit out of him with that pickup line. With anyone now, else, is going to be a dry spell.
Okay, now, do you remember, John Amos actually quit the show.
Yeah. Yeah, died on the show. He died. Yeah.
Now, do you remember when what's her name? What's the name? Was her name Isabel Sanford?
No, Isabel Sanford was on.
Was she on Jefferson's?
She was. Isabel Sanford was Mrs. Jefferson.
Oh, okay. So who?
Sherman
was
Hemsley and Isabel Sanford.
Yeah. Who's the mother on Good Times?
Katie. Can we Internet Movie Database
set?
Yeah, please. I can picture her face very clearly.
Katie, you should jump on this right away. You should always have it on hand.
Katie, just switch it over to that already open tab of Good Times trivia that you were reading before we even sat down for the podcast. Janet Dubois.
No, that was one of the
Jeanette
daughters.
Jeanette Dubois. Oh, no. Wilona. That was Wilona. The mother was Bernadette Stannis. No, that's not Thelma. Oh, no. Esther Rolle.
Yeah. Esther Rolle, thank you.
Well, they didn't have their pictures there. It was just the names.
Esther Rolle.
You might think we were being racist just now, but we were not. We were just looking at names.
We're just saying the cast of Good Times and the cast of The Jeffersons all looked alike.
I don't think we were saying that at all. We were saying not that. So everything Gilbert just said, but not what Gilbert just said. And the storm of controversy has already begun. But it's interesting territory. It's kind of a sort of a natural segue into the fact that when Joan Rivers was on the podcast a couple of years ago and she sort of talked about the same thing. She was like, they're jokes. They're not most of, you know, like,
yes.
So when she would say things and people would get upset, she'd be like, I'm not, it's a joke.
Yes.
It's comedy.
Yes.
And so you are someone who has gotten into trouble before from stuff that you say, and you
thank
must
thank God it never got in the papers or on the internet.
I mean, never.
Hi, boy, I dodged a bullet.
Oh, there's a lot of bullet holes. There's blood coming out.
That's why I'm always gainfully employed.
but there was. What was the what point did you? You don't try to be controversial. You just say things that you know.
Yes, that strike me as funny.
That sometimes people are like, "Hey, you shouldn't say that," and you're like, "But."
Yeah. It's a fucking joke.
So what do you think the rules are? Do you think there's a too soon and a not too soon?
Well,
and
here's how I feel about too soon, and everyone who's listening will notice that I'm hitting my hand on the desk.
Yes.
To make a point that shows what a fucking idiot I am. That I'm putting my hand, I'm doing a karate chop on the desk to make a point.
That's right.
Yes. It's just like everyone who's listening, I went fishing the other day and I caught a fish this big.
Whoa, that is an enormous fish that you've caught. I mean, if you could see.
And I went out with this girl, and boy, she had tits out to here.
Embracing the audio podcast format.
Yes. Hey, before we get back
of course.
I just, getting back to Esther Rolle for a second.
Sure.
Do you remember after John Amos mysteriously dies on the show?
Yeah.
And she's holding up very strong.
Yeah.
But she finally breaks down. Do you remember that scene?
Wasn't it kind of near the end of the show? She finally, like, she... I remember the tone of it.
There was an... I think it was right after he allegedly dies. And she's being very strong about it. And then at the end, she's washing the dishes.
Yes.
And she's cleaning a bowl. And she drops the bowl, and the bowl shatters on the ground. And in a dramatic sitcom fashion, she goes, "Damn, damn, damn!"
Yep. I do actually remember that. That was a period of sitcoms when that was like the Norman Lear era.
Yes,
where they would all of a sudden just get super serious.
Yes,
and it was just like. And I remember watching that and going, and even as a kid, understanding like, oh, the audience does not know how to react to this because a second ago, Jimmy Walker was saying dynamite, and now she's really upset about her dead husband.
I mean, I remember, though, there was also like an episode. See, what sitcoms do, too, to let you know you've just seen something meaningful is just have the credits come up at the end with
no applause, no music. Yeah.
And there was one episode of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air where, his name?
You must say that a million times a day.
Rabicio.
Giovanni.
Del
no, not Giovanni
Toro.
Russo.
What
was his name? But God damn it! Because he was discovered because he danced like Michael Jackson and when he was a kid, and then he got discovered and put on Fresh Prince of Bel Air. Gady, Internet Movie Database.
Yeah, I think his name was Esther Rolle.
It was Esther Rolle. Alfonso Ribeiro.
Oh yes. So there was one episode where I don't know, he finds out he's black or something. He looks, they finally get a mirror, and he finds out he's black.
Was that really, I don't.
That was the famous, he finds out he's black episode.
Didn't know the entire show.
Yeah, didn't know. The whole family walks by a Joe Walsh-sized mirror, and he goes, oh my God, we're a black family.
And then credits.
Yeah. Yeah, silence. It's just the, and I'm showing with my hand. I want you to know with my hand, I'm showing the credits going.
Rolling.
Yeah, here, okay.
That's right.
See, now we're both, it's kind of, you know those shows where they, I think it shows for like blind people, when they have a narrator. Have you ever watched that on TV? Sometimes I'll have that come on, and I'll have it like, whatever, Matlock or whatever.
Oh.
And you'll hear the announcer go, he picks up a pencil.
Oh, no, I didn't
yes.
know that they...
Oh, my
but
God.
But of course they would.
Yes, and he opens a car and looks both ways.
They would have to for the demographic of that particular show. They
yeah.
would have to have someone...
Because they're old boys.
They're very old people.
Now, back to a comedy that's offensive.
Yes. Yeah, so what...
Mine, because it's not funny. You know? It offends people who pay to see me.
Sometimes it does. So what's your stance?
Well, the idea, and I'm going to hit the desk again.
Hit it again.
I'm going to do my karate chop to the desk again to make a point. I always thought, I love the term too soon, because it's like, at least when I say a joke, that's a I'm having a stroke. On
Are you
show.
Okay?
That's how animate.
No, half of you is starting
this.
To sag into the chair. Are
my
you okay?
arm is hanging from
well, what
my
are you gonna,
side.
What are you going to pound on the desk for emphasis
yes.
now?
And right now, the narrator is going, his arm is hanging on the side, and his mouth is halfway open.
Gilbert is having a stroke while Matlock picks up a pencil. And then Andy Griffith just walks in.
Yeah. And... So I always felt like, at least when I say a joke that's too soon or bad taste, everybody hears it and laughs or gets offended because they know it's offensive. They know it's a bad taste thing. And when people go, oh, you know, when you wait, it's okay and I'm a good person because I waited, then it's like people can do jokes about Abraham Lincoln being shot
right.
in the Titanic. And so it, if you're a good person, you go, well, time has passed. I don't know anyone
right.
involved with that, so fuck them. I'm a good person.
I didn't know Lincoln. Fuck
yeah,
that guy.
I didn't know Lincoln. Fuck him and fuck everyone on the Titanic.
But I guess I never thought that before, that people go, I waited, and now I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I mean, it's like, I remember a year after the tsunami, and you notice I said a year. I don't know why. But a year. I remember I saw it on TV. It was popping up like, oh, it's a regular tsunami going on here. You know, like jokes were coming out.
Right.
And I thought, oh, so... 1 year, after a year, it's a joke and no longer a crime against humanity.
Right.
And it's like, I always thought that was ridiculous.
Well, comedy is one thing that tries to help us deal with, or at least feel like we have control over the most horrible things.
Oh, yes.
In the yeah. world. So I think as long as, you know... If an audience, I think, understands, like, oh, it's not that this person's trying to be disrespectful. It's they're
trying. He just is. He just is a fucking prick. He's not trying. It just comes naturally to him being a fucking asshole.
He's just really good at it. So let him spread his wings and fly over the pits of Mordor. What? Was that always kind of the thing that you did, or was it, you know?
No, it's just I figured I could lose more work. The more tasteful I was, I kept jobs, and I said, this is no fun.
So you wanted to light some shit on fire. Do you like to light stuff on fire?
Oh, yes. Yeah, usually bags of dog shit. But that's a whole other story.
Who was your who did you come up with? Like, who were some of the other people in your comedy world?
Oh, God. God. Yes. That's how long I've been doing it.
It's a long time.
Yeah, Jesus.
Yeah, slightly less long, but still a long
time. Yeah, Moses, but he was too Jewy. I didn't like him. In those clubs, Jerry Seinfeld, Paul Reiser, Bill Maher, Dennis Miller, a bunch of people.
Do you still talk to Dennis Miller at all? I'm always fascinated by Dennis Miller.
Yes.
Because his second comedy special is one of my favorite comedy specials of all time, which I think it was the second one, Black and White. And then as the years went on, he seemed to get a little weird.
Yeah, it's weird. He's like now a sidekick to Bill O'Reilly.
It's not. I'm not talking shit about him. I just think it's a different.
He's a different person.
A different cat.
Yeah.
But he also, I don't feel as bad because he was kind of a dick to me when I first met him. I'm like, oh, all right. Yeah, I guess that's fine. But I think in general, like everyone, you know, everyone kind of found their little place and found their little corner of entertainment and, you know, how to express it. What did you ultimately, when you started doing stand-up, did you just think, well, I'm just going to be a touring comedian? Or did you, because in those days, you didn't, it's not like stand-ups got put on television all the time. That didn't really start happening until like the late 80s.
And it's funny because a little later on, with the comedy boom, there were so many comedians that used to go on every night at the clubs where I knew this is nothing more than an audition to get a sitcom or a part in a movie.
Right.
You know, because they had no material or anything.
7 minutes to build a show.
Yeah. And that they are hoping one day, and with a few it worked. But they were hoping, you know, one day someone see them and go, oh, they've got kind of a likable charm about them.
Right. They could be a Tim Allen or a Jerry Seinfeld. Yeah. But that did breed a lot of like the 7 minute stand up routine.
Oh, yeah.
And then if those people ever kind of went on to have to ever tour, then it was a disaster.
Well, also those shows like. Now it's, it used to be Star Search, and then there's a million other shows like that, where it's like the winner has 7 minutes.
Right.
7 killer minutes. And then if they have to do 8 minutes somewhere, it's stretching it.
What, is there one experience in your head that you think of as the worst stand-up experience that you've ever had?
Oh, God. I remember one time I got asked to do someplace to perform somewhere, and I showed up at the address. It was in New York on this dark street, and there was a building there, and that was the address. And I thought, well, this certainly isn't a comedy club. So I went to the building, and I went in the door. And it was an empty warehouse with some broken chairs and litter around. And this guy came on. He said, okay, I'm going to put you on in 10 minutes and no blue material. And I said something like, I just have to run across the street and get something. I'll be right back. And he might still be waiting there for all I know.
So you didn't see any audience? There was nothing?
No, nothing. No sign of life. There was me and him.
You would have ended up in a bathtub full of ice without your kidneys. He's going to be like, well, who's going to miss a comedian? Like you would have died. Your fight or flight instinct served you well in that case. I don't think I ever had anything like that. I think it's always when the audience is so vastly different.
Oh yeah,
from what it is that you have to offer, and it's like, well, do I try to pull them in, or is it just like, well, we're just not going to connect?
Oh yeah,
tonight.
Yeah, like a horrible date.
And then and then sometimes the sort of dickhead comic gene will kick in, and then it's like, oh well, now I'm going to make you suffer.
Oh yeah, that I usually open with. I remember one time seeing Rodney Dangerfield on stage, and the audience wasn't laughing at anything.
Really?
He said, yeah. And so finally, he looks at them angrily, you know, pulling at his tie and shirt and moving around. And he goes, hey, if anyone tells you you're a hot crowd, you spit in their face.
Did they laugh at that?
I laughed at it.
I know. Well, at a certain point, if it's not going well, then the comic will just start lobbing jokes to the other comics in the back of the room.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you know what's scary is when a comedian's on stage and he's bombing, totally bombing, no laughs at all, and then you figure, oh, he better just wrap up and get off. And then he'll do something that gets a laugh, and that encourages him to go longer.
Which right? is, he should just be like, I got it. I should get the fuck out of here.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, yeah, exactly.
Like Jackie Gleason in that Miami show he used to do. Do you remember Jackie Gleason used to do... Well, you have to be 90 to know this. People in homes now are going, oh, finally, something we know about.
Yeah, well, you know, when they because they love to blast the podcast in the retirement communities. Because they're elderly people love to listen to much younger people talk about pop culture references they don't usually understand.
Jackie Gleason had this variety show.
I knew it would pay off sooner
or
later.
Yeah, see?
Listen, they're talking about him.
Oh, 5 of our patients just died from the excitement.
They're all crowded around an iPhone that's just playing a podcast. Like it's an old-timey radio. They don't know any better. What was this Jackie Gleason show?
Okay. So, and on that show, every now and then they would try to bring back the Honeymooners, but they'd bring it back as a musical.
Okay.
And it would have him and Art Carney, but two other women. And it's like you wondered. It was all of a sudden sad now. Like, you could laugh at the early Honeymooners of him in the one-room apartment with no TV and no phone. But, you know, you figure, uh-oh, this guy's like 80 now. And now it's getting kind of sad.
Never got out of that apartment.
Yeah.
Things never got better.
And where did he get that orange-brown tan?
If you know, driving the bus.
Yeah, a bus in Brooklyn, you really get a lot of sunlight.
I mean, really, The Honeymooners is a depressing show.
Oh, very much.
He's horribly abusive to his wife. She puts up with it. I mean, sometimes she'll put her foot down, but basically, she's only ever given every once in a while a morsel of, baby, you're the greatest.
Which brings us back... to the Black Honeymooners.
Oh, no, they
with
did.
Cedric the Entertainer.
Mm-hmm.
Cedric as Ralph Crandon. This was an idea that couldn't have lasted as a terrible sketch on Saturday Night Live.
And they tried to make it a show.
Yes, that it was so horrible.
Well, they had a terrible marriage. And I know the idea was supposed to be... Well, you know, but love conquers all,
yes.
I guess. But basically, he gets home from work, yells at his wife. She's way out of his league.
Yeah.
He probably just, you know, a couple times a month gives her a couple of pumps and then, you know, and then he's shitty to his friend who's almost mentally challenged.
Yes.
And
well, speaking of mentally challenged,
no.
Before... Which we love to speak about. Hi, we're speaking about mentally challenged. So before that, Gleason had another show where he used to do a sketch called Joe the Bartender. And he'd play a bartender, and there'd be a character who always sat by the bar named Crazy McGillicuddy.
Okay.
And
it's a good comedy name, right?
Yes,
away.
Yes, Crazy McGillicuddy. And he'd go, hi there, Crazy. And he'd go, hey, Joe. Hi, Mr. Daddy. And he was a drunk, but he was one of those drunks where you said, well, he's drunk and also mentally handicapped.
And how hilarious for audiences at that time.
Did you not laugh?
Yeah.
It's... It's brain damage and alcoholism. How could you not?
I mean, the nexus of those two. I mean, separately, those things are very sad. But when you bring them together...
If he only had polio.
It's just audiences at the time could not handle that much comedy.
Yes.
In one... And then, you know, Gleason's wife would come in and he'd hit her and everyone would laugh. Oh, yes. And then they'd go home. That was such a strange time for what... But I guess it was coming out of, I don't know, vaudeville radio comedy. And, you know, I would imagine... I mean, vaudeville comedy, I'm guessing, was probably pretty base.
But then, like a much later sitcom... They'd have, and the critics were in love with it, and that was Murphy Brown.
Yeah.
With Candace Bergen.
Yeah.
And I remember that was a show, I would love for them to bring that one back now, where the punchline was, who do you think you are, Spiro Agnew?
What's that?
And hey, who do you think you are, Dan Quayle? And they'd mention, like, politicians... who were in the news that day.
Right.
So when the show aired a week later, it was already old news.
I say we do a sitcom now and retain those references.
Yes.
let's take a sitcom and not tell anyone what we're doing, but we're going to take all the references that were in Murphy Brown and apply them to a contemporary show. Were you at the roast where Norm MacDonald read out of the joke book of Saget?
Yes.
You were at Saget's roast, right?
Yeah. He read like his old joke insults.
Yeah.
And I remember his joke insult to me was something like, there's a sign on the men's room that says, gentlemen, well, pay no heed, you can go in anyway.
Jesus Christ. Did you guys... Because I was at that roast, and the audience... The comics were all laughing.
Yes.
The audience was completely
no
dumbfounded.
Yeah, I was cracking up. I love anything where the audience has no idea what's going on.
I don't know if I would ever actually do any of the roasts, because I feel bad just taking a shit on people.
See, I like taking a shit on people.
On people.
But I usually pay extra to have them shit on me. But that's a whole other story. I'll talk... After the podcast is over, we'll talk about how I like to get shit on.
I think it'd be really great. I always think it'd be really funny to put people on the spot when they do the comedy. Like, but that's another story. And be like, well, let's talk about it.
Yeah, tell me that
just
story.
To see how far the riff can actually go.
Here's an old joke. a husband and wife are having trouble there. Their relationship is getting boring. Their sex life is falling apart. And then finally, the wife says, hey, how about try this? Why didn't you shit on me tonight? This is, I heard...
Watching you tell this joke is better than the joke.
Yes. So she goes, why don't you shit on me? Which is something you have to accept in the joke world. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I
that would
see,
happen.
Yeah,
would totally
I could
just
see
come out of nowhere.
Someone's wife going, why don't you take a shit on me?
Yeah.
And him going, okay,
sure.
Why not? So he takes his shit on her.
Some other things happen, and then he shits on her.
This is, I think, Kelly Lee is going to, what's her name? Kelly Ripa.
Kelly Ripa?
Kelly Ripa is going to be telling this joke tomorrow morning.
You're going to see it on
She's
the show.
She's going to open the show.
Yeah.
So he takes his shit on her. And then he's, then he's fucking her. And the shit smeared all over the two of them. And they really... naturally enjoy it immensely.
Of course.
And then the next night, the guy eats a large pizza with extra cheese, and he gets into bed with his wife and takes an even bigger shit on her, and they're fucking, and the shit's going all over the place. And then the next night, he eats a lasagna with extra meat and garlic bread and takes a humongous shit on her, and then he's fucking her. And you might have to clean this up for TV. if you ever do the Tonight Show, you
which,
might.
Which part?
Okay. And then the next night, he has like a giant ice cream sundae with whipped cream and chocolate sauce and bananas. And he squats down on top of her, and he's straining, and nothing's coming out. And he's straining some more, and nothing's coming. And he keeps straining. And then finally, he goes, I can't. And the wife breaks down crying, and she goes, you don't love me anymore.
Is that a joke, or did you just make that up?
No, it was an episode of The Honeymoon.
Oh,
where Gleason goes, I'm going to shit on you, Alex.
Hey, Ralphie Boy, you're going to shit on the wife tonight? I shit on Trixie last night. It was good times.
So you're saying you shit on Trixie?
Oh, yeah.
I shit on Alex.
I shit all over every night, Ralphie Boy. You want to use my vest to clean it up? I would love
to see like deviant honeymooners, like fetish. It's like you see all the stuff you never see in the bedroom. It was only in the kitchen.
Oh,
but
yeah.
If they just move the cameras into the bedroom, what kind of weird, fucked up things? I mean, Alice must have been getting something out of that relationship.
Oh, yes.
But no one could ever see what it was. What was the last episode of The Honeymooners? Do you know what the last episode was?
Ooh.
Did they resolve anything, or was it just like, well, that's it?
I think, yes. Ralph dies, and Alice is washing a bowl. And she goes, damn, damn, damn. And people didn't know why, even though she was upset, why she sounded black.
And then credits. No audience.
Yeah.
They just didn't know. They didn't know how prophetic it would be. That's amazing. But you must be pleased that in the internet age that you can pretty much say whatever you want and have an outlet, because in the 80s...
And it doesn't offend anyone.
Not one person ever
no
gets
one
upset.
Has anything to no, say about it.
No, no, no. It's you're Teflon. Nothing sticks.
Yeah.
But you couldn't... I mean, in the 80s, everything really did pretty much have to be TV friendly at all times.
Oh, yes, yes. Yes.
So...
Yes.
When did you start to
I feel like I'm at the McCarthy hearings. Yes.
Are you a communist?
Are you now, or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party? See, not too many people do a Senator Joe McCarthy imitation.
That is some... Again, we're going to put that in the Murphy Brown sitcom.
Yes.
We got Joe McCarthy and Victor Bergen. Hey!
Oh, it ties in. Victor Bergen, it all ties in.
To Candace.
Hey, let me get a plug out of the way first.
Sure.
I have a podcast now. Doesn't everyone?
I don't.
Doesn't every fucking person in the world? I look across the desk at you and I go, Jesus, every fucking asshole has a podcast. So I have a podcast. It's called Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast.
Uh-huh.
You could hear it on GilbertGottfried.com and subscribe to it on iTunes or SideshowNetwork.tv.
Okay.
Okay.
And how long have you been doing your podcast?
Never. I never taped an episode. I just got the idea. Now it's talking to you.
Oh, good.
That anyone. No, I don't know. For a few months now.
Do you like it? Do you like the format?
I've been interviewing. I like to interview old Hollywood, whenever, who's alive.
Right.
I come up with these names the next week. I see they're already dead, and I have to adjust the list.
So it's just a race. It's a race.
And I was originally going to call the show the Before It's Too Late Show. But I thought it was going to be hard getting guests on the show if you say, can you do my podcast? Because I think you might drop dead in 2 days.
It's called, the podcast called Last Rites.
Yeah.
And you know, if there's anything you want to say to the world, now's a good time.
The podcast is called He Will Be Missed.
Parting Thoughts with Gilbert Gottfried. We're all huddled around the iPhone at the retirement community.
Yeah, can you do my podcast obituary? Yes, okay.
Is there anything you want to get off your chest or anything you ever wanted to let people know or buried treasure? Well, that's good, though. Who have you had on so far?
I had on Larry Storch.
Oh, my God, from F-Troop, yeah.
Who's like 92, and he's not the oldest person. We had on Joe Franklin.
You did?
Yeah. Marty Allen.
Oh, wow.
From Allen and Rossi. Holy they followed shit. The Beatles on Ed Sullivan.
Oh, my God.
And Dick Cavett seemed like the teenager of the show.
He's yeah. He's a good talker.
Oh, he's one of those click on the mic and you don't have to do a thing.
What was Joe Franklin like?
Joe Franklin... discovered every single person in the business, if you listen to him. And he claims, I'm hitting the desk to make a point, he claims that on one of his shows, he had on both James Dean and Al Pacino. And then I did the math on it and figured, well, Al Pacino would have had to have been 10
right.
when he was on that show.
He probably had an Al Pacino and James Dean impersonator on the show. And in his mind, he was like, I've had them on.
Yeah.
They've very much both been on the program. Joe Franklin was like YouTube before YouTube, basically.
Yes. He was one of those shows. He was mainly East Coast. And he was one of those shows that would come on when there was nothing on TV, and then as it came to the later hours where TV was about to shut off altogether, the Joe Franklin show would come on.
I just remember it from I saw the SNL parodies of it first, the Billy Crystal version of the Joe Franklin show. But I didn't, it wasn't until after that I was like, oh, that's a real show that they're making fun of.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And he used to... It would start off with a montage of all of him sitting with every major celebrity in show business. And then the show would start, and it would be some hotel lounge singer and some guy who's a dentist.
Yeah.
And they would be talking, and then he'd try to get them to talk together and go, you as a singer, your teeth would have to look good, so you could go to this dentist here.
He was trying to be a connector.
Yes.
But they're questions that are unanswerable, so they'd be like...
Oh, yes, it was horrible.
They'd be like, yeah, I guess I could.
It was wonderfully painful.
I mean, that was sort of the... That was maybe the beginning of, like, Schadenfreude viewing television, I would imagine.
Yes, or any other Nazi television. Yes. Hi, it's Nazi television.
Again, we'll put it in the Candace Bergen show. What made you decide to start doing a podcast? Was it the, like, fuck?
Yeah,
am fuck. I the last comic not doing a podcast?
I thought of the word fuck, and I said, podcast. I used to get into talk. Well, like, I mean, I have a co-host, Frank Santopadre, who's a writer on The View, and I used to talk to him. And I have an assortment of friends who are fascinated with old Hollywood mm-hmm. and these forgotten names. And finally, I figured, fuck it, I'll do a podcast.
Someone should do it.
Yeah. And, I could not get, you know, I would have loved to have interviewed like Boris Karloff and Bela Lugosi, but they're long gone. So I got the daughter of Boris Karloff.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I called her up and I said, would you do the show? And she said, oh, yes, I'd love to do it.
How was she?
She actually was alert and fun and everything. And I interviewed...
That's the reviews for your guest now. The guest was alert.
She was breathing.
Seemed to know most of the words.
She didn't have any body parts that were falling off. She didn't all of a sudden start screaming for no reason at all and go, who are you? But what am I doing here?
Your podcast hopefully has a set of paddles nearby.
Oh, yes. That you could... Yes. Yeah. What does the thing they yell?
Clear.
Clear. Boom. Clear. And I heard in real life, doctors very rarely use those, like defibrillators. And
That's like, TV lied to us?
Yeah, yeah. And when they do, it's not even that strong. It's I even read somewhere that they said that, what is it? Electroshock treatment. They said electroshock treatment is not as powerful or painful as they show you in the movies.
It sounds like maybe they're trying to justify it a little bit. Oh, it's not that bad at all.
If you've ever been hit by an army tank, it pales in comparison.
If you've ever had a really hot pepperoni placed onto the bald spot of your eyeball... It's just...
To the balls on your eyeball.
To your eyeballs.
That's extra sensitive if your balls are growing out of your eyeball.
Those would be the most sensitive balls.
Yes, yes. So then if someone... They could punch you in the eye and hit you in the balls at the same time.
But then...
This will be discussed on 60 Minutes next week.
Do you... your comedy is Your comedy is kind of joke-based.
Some is joke-based. Some's just long, lingering thing with no point whatsoever.
So when you go on stage, what is it that you want?
I usually like to talk about stuff that's true, like the guy who shits on his wife.
100%
Yeah, true. Yeah, that happened. Because... Did I tell you I have a podcast?
No.
It's called Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast. You can hear it on gilbertgottfried.com. I'm hitting the desk again for emphasis. And subscribe on iTunes or SideshowNetwork.tv. And please watch the episode where Jackie Gleason shits
on Audrey Meadows.
On Audrey.
It was an outtake. He improv'd it. He wasn't gonna, but it was live television, so it went out.
Where Edgar Bergen takes his shit on Candace Bergen.
Where Edgar Bergen puts his hand up Charlie McCarthy and pulls out a fistful of shit as a joke. Because that would be ridiculous. It was a ventriloquist dummy, but audiences just weren't ready for it yet. So he didn't work a lot after that. What an amazing time, though. I mean, like, I feel like all my comedian friends now, we're all sober.
Yeah.
But I feel like...
I take an occasional crystal meth, but that's recreational, but just on holidays.
A recreational meth user. But I feel like in the 80s, everyone was doing drugs, I would imagine.
Yeah, and it was like, well, you know what? What I love is like when I did Hollywood Squares, it was like nobody was like bombed or anything like that. And I heard on the original Hollywood Squares and the original Tonight Show, all those guys, they would have like a guy... They would have wine and alcohol in everyone's dressing room.
Oh, probably like Match Game, everyone was tanked.
You'd see these old celebrities bombed out of their skull on these shows.
Which, you know, I'm sure it was like, well, let's relax them with the alcohol, but the side benefit is that they'll be super drunk. And that's, I mean, like the whole Foster Brooks thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like that, for some reason, that...
yeah, it's very nice of me.
I mean, that was a thing. That was a comedy thing. The drunk guy. But I guess it's no different now because now it's just stoner comics. Like, we have the same thing.
Oh, yeah,
now.
Yeah. It's just like later on it would morph into Cheech and Chong.
I think it evolved out of the Victorian opium comics.
And on the Andy Griffith Show, they had Otis the town drunk.
Everyone had a town drunk.
Yeah.
Yeah. But now, I guess The Simpsons has Barney Gumble.
Oh, yes.
But they tried to sober him up, and then I think they were like, he's not funny when he's sober.
They once did a TV movie called Back to Mayberry, where they brought back all the people from the old Andy Griffith Show, with the exception of Aunt Bea, who was still alive at the time.
Really?
And she and Andy didn't get along.
They couldn't patch it up for the reunion.
Yeah, they couldn't patch it up for the reunion. And I remember Otis, they had brought back the guy that played Otis, but he was sober now.
Oh.
And it was like, so, you know, they should have written off, well, he got drunk and the alcohol killed him. And then put on the laugh track like, ha, 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 ha.
He got really drunk and ran over Aunt Bea.
Yeah.
So that's why she's not here.
And then, realizing he killed Aunt Bea, he slashed his wrists.
and that's all the pre-show, and then they get to the credits.
Oh, that reminds me. Also on my podcast, I had on Butch Patrick.
Oh yeah, Eddie Munster.
Yes, and he was very open about everything. He talked about being on drugs and all that.
And what else happened on the set of The Munsters?
I wish other stuff. He didn't remember all that much. But, The Munster, I remember he did say, I mean, at least about the other people, he remembered about himself. He did say that he had, like, a little, I think it was called a Woofie doll that he used to hold, like, that looked like the Wolfman.
Yeah.
And he had one, and a guy made a bunch of copies, and they were selling them. And he made a lot of money, and he said all of which went to buy him drugs the minute the check came in.
Oh, that's a nice story.
Yeah, it was a lovely, lovely.
So he was doing drugs as a kid.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
And I'm sure at the time, just because of the way Hollywood worked, they were like, give him drugs. We got to keep him,
keep
the kid happy.
Alert.
Yeah.
And the only person who was upset was Fred Gwynne, who went, darn, darn, darn.
Right after he dropped the dish?
Yeah. Yeah, see, they couldn't say damn, damn.
Right.
Damn. So, darn, darn, darn.
Oh, Grandpa died, but he's a vampire. He didn't have any good Al Lewis stories? I can't believe that he didn't have any good Al Lewis stories.
No, surprisingly. He was friends with Al Lewis.
Who I think is still alive.
No. He eventually, they drove a stake through his heart, I think.
Do you are you a pretty upbeat guy, or are you a pretty intense guy? What side of the comic spectrum do you fall on?
I'm a regular Van Gogh.
Oh, really?
Yes, I have an artificial ear that I'm wearing now because I cut my... Now, there's arguments to that, whether he cut his entire ear off or just part of his ear.
The kids love the fierce, raging argument about how much of his ear... It's enough to make them put their Xbox controllers down and start debating how much of his own ear Vincent Van Gogh sliced. Van Gogh! Vincent Van Gogh! But is it, you know, the comedy brain is a unique organism, you know? So is it? Are you pretty cool with it now, or do you still, were you always sort of, are you actually neurotic?
Yeah, I would say so. I'd say that's a safe bet.
And does comedy help channel that?
Oh, I guess maybe. Like I heard that Jonathan Winters wouldn't go to a psychiatrist because he was afraid it would ruin whatever made him funny.
So he wanted to stay a little...
Yes.
Yeah. That's really interesting. But I guess, in his case, I guess it worked. But I don't know. I think that's a fallacy, though, that the idea of like, oh, I got to be drunk to be funny, or I got to be crazy to be funny, or I got to be this. I guess Nat King Cole wouldn't quit smoking because he was like, no, the cigarettes make my voice better.
Oh, yes. And eventually, cancer will make me appealing to the women.
They love it. The ladies love it. But is it... were you always... You really feel like you were always that way? Did it ever get any better?
No.
Okay. Did it get worse?
Yes.
Okay.
Ellen, we were talking about... getting back to offensive comedy.
Oh, you want to talk about that?
Sure, why not?
Well, I just wonder what audiences... I mean, I guess if the audience kind of understands that you're not coming from an attacking place.
Yeah, it's like... I mean, years ago, I mean, if we had the internet and the audiences and people now who are on the internet, they would go, oh, you know, Foster Brooks, how can you make fun of a man with an alcohol problem? That is not a joke.
Right, right.
And it's, I think people now love to pat themselves on the back when they're offended.
I think the only thing the main thing that bothers me about it is that generally, people don't have a problem laughing at misfortunes that don't land near their doorstep.
Oh, yes.
But the second it does, and they're like, how could you say that? It's like, yeah, but you just laughed at that other joke.
Oh,
and that
yes.
was that joke was about adoption, and someone who's adopted might have been really upset about that, but you laughed about that, so why would you not, you know? I guess it just depends
and
on...
people are conveniently... it's like when I lost the whole Affleck thing, I feel like Affleck fired me, got loads of free publicity off it, and then hired a new guy to imitate my voice for less money, thus bringing closure to a horrible tragedy.
Did you find out about that? Did you find
on
out about
the internet?
On the internet, yeah.
On the internet. I wasn't called on the internet.
And did that make you change? Did you feel like that made you change the way you deal with the internet at all? Were you like, well, fuck it now?
Oh, yeah.
I guess you already fired me. What are you going to do? Fire me again?
Yeah, exactly.
So what was that experience then? Like, were you reading there going, wait, this can't be real? Oh, shit.
Yeah, and it's like, especially it can't be real because you're thinking, oh, well, so this means absolutely nobody in that company ever saw me on stage, ever watched Friars, Comedy Central roast,
right,
or a Friars roast, never heard my Dirty Joke DV, and never heard of the Aristocrats.
Right.
Yeah.
did anyone from the company ever contact you? Or was
No. Never. It was on the internet. And then I think after it was old news, someone finally called my agent.
And said, oh, we're going to go in exactly the same direction with
yes.
a different person. I like that they didn't even try to have a new...
Yeah, and their ad campaign was, we're looking for the new voice of the duck. And so the new voice of the duck is the old voice of the duck.
Just yeah. not the guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, fuck.
You think, like, okay, if they started doing it with a British accent or something.
And are you pretty zen about it now, or is it still upsetting?
Now I talk about it, yeah. It's like, because everyone brings it up, so I forget, what the hell.
I didn't bring it up this time, just so you know. I wasn't going to bring it up.
Yeah.
It's nice that you brought it up.
No, but you brought up shitting on a woman.
No, that was your joke.
Oh, damn it. I knew somebody brought it up.
But it's because he didn't love her anymore.
Yes, he didn't.
He just didn't love her enough. But maybe he could find someone that ultimately he could shit on someday. Yes. I like to break down jokes as literally as possible.
Yes, yes, you're like my analyst. Well, he didn't love her enough, so naturally he shit on her.
Are you performing anywhere live anytime soon?
No, I'll be performing somewhere dead soon.
No.
I'll be performing at a bunch of places. You could see that also on my schedule on gilbertgottfried.com.
No, I'm curious. Do you have a podcast on that website as well?
Well, it's funny you should bring it up.
Okay.
Much like you brought up shitting on your wife.
Well, I feel like you did that.
Yeah. No. Please.
I don't like commitment. I would just shit on my girlfriend.
It's too much commitment.
And I have a podcast called Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast. You can hear it on GilbertGottfried.com or subscribe to it on iTunes or SideshowNetwork.tv.
Excellent. And so... so I'm just hearing about this for the first time. You do a podcast?
Yes, I do a podcast.
You talk to...
and the Miami Beach audience is the best audience in the whole world. Good night, everybody. Yeah, that's what Gleason
would sign up.
And his show, he used to rap.
I heard a story that he tried to launch a game show.
Yes!
And the show was so bad that the next week he came on and apologized and then just had his friends on and they just talked.
Yes, it was some show, I think it was you stuck your head through a thing and you had to guess what picture was around your face. And he went on the next week at the same time slot and apologized, saying how awful the show was.
What a great time when networks wouldn't cancel you. They were like, well... you got to fill the time.
Yeah.
Somehow.
So go on
you made a commitment.
Say that it was an awful show.
And then just talk to your friends and then yell at people for a half hour. Would you have wanted to work in television back then?
Well, you know what I think about getting back to F Troop? Because you mentioned it.
Yes. Well, I was talking about my podcast on GilbertGottfried.com.
If I were around years ago, I could have been one of the Indian chiefs on F Troop. Now it would be like, oh God, they had someone who's not a Native American playing a Native American, and it's like back then it was like mainly like Jew Borscht Belt comics were their Indian chiefs.
Darken him up.
Yes.
Put a headdress on him. This is an Indian. Who gives a shit? No one's going to give a shit. What? It's not like these dumb shits who are watching at home have any way to communicate with one another on some vast network of machines who could be upset. No one's going to give a shit. Put the guy in brown face. Let's get the fuck out of here. I got to get home and shit on my wife.
It'll be centuries before people have podcasts.
I don't even know what that word is that I said.
I heard it on the Jeffersons. They mentioned.
Which is also 10 years away. I'm a psychic racist. I have psychic projections about things that are racist. Damn, damn, damn. I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, but I picture an African American, as they will be called.
Psychic racist.
Not the word we favor nowadays, which will not be allowed.
Anyway. The 1960s, the era that we live in currently. What a time. What a time. I don't know where to go from there. I think this is the perfect place to end the podcast. We're at an hour five.
Yeah. The Miami Beach audience. Yeah.
Good night, Miami Beach. Good night. Gilbert Gottfried's The Amazing Colossal
Podcast.
Oh, I forgot the most important word.
I'm sorry. Yeah, that was
the amazing. What is that word again?
Podcast.
I tell you, I don't know if you're drunk or mentally challenged or both, but I'm going to keep you around to dance for me.
The audience
love it. They love it. You're weaker than they are, and it makes them feel better about themselves, and that's why we're keeping you around. Stop stepping on my joke. Oh. Did my eyes roll back in my head again? It happened again. I had another moment. You should tell people to enjoy their burrito. That's how we end the podcast. We
say, enjoy your burrito.
Gilbert Gottfried, a pleasure. Nice to see you. Come back again when you're around.
Oh, no, I learned my lesson with this one.
That's It's bad. We can't. Where do you live in New York?
Yes. I'm not going to give my address on the air.
So you live at 50. I can't remember. Yes. What is your address? It's a,
but my number's 555.
Always takes me out of a movie. No matter what, no matter how good the movie is, the second they say 555, I am instantly pulled out.
And they do it in some of the best movies.
Yep.
Where you think, don't they know that everybody knows this already?
Just come up with like five number prefixes that are okay to use.
Yeah.
And then just use those.
I'll see a movie that I'm really into and they'll go, okay, give me a call. 555. And I'll go, all right, forget it.
Even,
I'm out.
Even in Ghostbusters, when they show the commercial that they did, like, we're ready to believe you, it says KL5.
Oh,
it's like,
yes.
Even in 1984, people weren't using letters.
I know.
God damn it.
Yeah, it makes me mad.
I'm upset too.
And what? Oh, the other thing that makes me mad is during a birthday party when they sing, "For he's a jolly good fellow." Like, who sings that at a birthday party?
The Elks Club.
Yes, exactly.
That's it. I don't think the Kiwanis or the Moose Lodge. I don't think anyone now, I don't think any kids now at birthday parties. Whoa, Spider-Man's here, yeah, for he's a jolly good fellow. Nobody, not one person, not one person. Well, have a safe trip back to New York. When are you heading back?
Think
about
Wednesday.
It. You're going back Wednesday.
Wednesday. Yeah, I had to think about that.
And you're not performing anywhere live?
I am performing somewhere
live. Well, if people wanted to know that information, where would they go?
GilbertGottfried.com and check schedules.
I would only go there if there was a podcast.
If there was a podcast.
I would go. I could see going.
Say, off the top of my head, say it was Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast.
Well, that doesn't sound like a real thing.
But yeah, and if it were a real thing, then you'd have to subscribe to, I don't know, iTunes or SideshowNetwork.tv.
Well, what kind of...
Or if we're going to go really crazy, you could say I have a book and DVD that you can get on Gilbert
Gottfried. Well, that's just crazy. I mean, yeah. Who would even go on this podcast? What do you get, like Larry Storch? What do you get, Boris Karloff's daughter? I mean, who the fuck would even go on such a podcast?
Who's on it? Marty Allen?
he's not even still alive. I mean, come on. That's made up. All right, the end.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.